The pressure to pride, that's what we're thinking about this lunchtime. Now, social status is a relative thing, social status. In one social circle, a person may be highly regarded and respected, yet in another they may be ridiculed or despised. So a professor may be revered in a university, but mocked in a pub. A footballer may be worshipped on the football field, but denied in polite company. Or a herbalist or reflexologist or something like that may be acknowledged as a cutting-edge thinker in alternative medicine circles, but dismissed as a quack by mainstream Western medicine. It's all relative. So it is with wisdom. That's what it's like with wisdom. The streetwise, sophisticated, boastful man or woman about town may command respect with the world's wisdom of pride, but they are ridiculed by heaven's wisdom of humility. And so we're faced with the wisdom of pride versus the wisdom of humility. And in our reading today, James confronts us with these two kinds of wisdom. The wisdom that comes from above, that is characterized by humility, or the wisdom that comes from below, that is characterized by pride. Now, James is just he's coming from an argument, if you notice, that ran from really chapter 2 and verse 14, but includes it has a special section from chapter 3, verse 1, where he's making the point that what you are is shown by what you do. What you believe is shown by what you do. And he's reached the conclusion in verse 12, if you see. He says, my brothers, can a fig tree bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. The kind of wisdom, and then he's moving on, you see, he's making that Jesus, of course, is the classic teacher of this point, that by their fruits you'll know a person. James is piggybacking on that point that Jesus makes. And then he's kind of pushing on with it now to these two kinds of wisdom. He's been unveiling two kinds of person. And he's reaching a zenith of it, really, here, when it comes down to the wisdom that ultimately motivates a person. So here in verse 13, he says, the kind of wisdom a person believes in will be shown by their lifestyle. Actions come out of the heart, what you believe in. So he issues a challenge. Who is wise and understanding among you? Well, it's kind of a trick question, really, isn't it? Because a person who is wise in the wisdom of God's not going to say, oh, I am. I'm wise. I'm full of understanding. So it's a trick question. Anyone who responds to it automatically shows what kind of wisdom they're into. So the wise people in God's eyes don't push themselves forward. But why don't they? Well, he goes on to explain. The truly wise person and the one who has real understanding shows this by their good life, not by merely claiming to be wise. Anyone can do that. It's almost as if James is anticipating someone replying to his question with a description of how wise they are, with some speech about their great understanding. You know, I studied here, I've got this degree, I've read this, I've been here, I know this, I've seen this, all that kind of thing. Well, that's just words, isn't it? He's saying, well, let's see what you've got, what kind of wisdom you've really got. Let's see if you can deliver. Because human wisdom is always very vocal about itself. It's bark and no bite kind of thing. I almost give myself ulcers regularly listening to those discussion programs on the radio or television. There's something, you know, a bit pompous, isn't there, about these folk who sit in a studio putting the world to rights with mere words. Just words. This is what people should do. This is the way to be. Why can't everybody be like this? Just words, isn't it? Empty words of human wisdom. They hold forth, as I'm sure we do from time to time. I find myself doing exactly the same thing. Holding forth on any and every topic, but nothing to back it all up with. I haven't delivered. I haven't lived it out. And then that's the mark of human wisdom. Speaks, but there's nothing there. Nothing to back it up with. Well, true wisdom and understanding does rather than says. Its actions speak louder than its words. James makes this point here. And what kind then? So real wisdom, real understanding shows itself in a good life. But what kind of a good life displays authentic wisdom? Well, look at the end of verse 13. It's a life full of deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Humble deeds. That's what wisdom produces. But then on the other hand, in verse 14, James gives us another option, the wisdom of the world, and he warns us that if our hearts contain bitter envy and selfish ambition, we do well to keep our mouths tightly closed rather than speaking too much, rather than boasting about ourselves. Better to be quiet. If we haven't got the reality of true wisdom in our hearts, then all our pride and boasting is, do you notice that at the end of verse 14, it's a denial of the truth. To boast is to deny the truth. We cannot speak the truth from a boastful or selfish heart. Truth cannot be separated from godliness and humility. It's interesting that on Sunday, John Cook made the point that the opposite of faith is not unbelief. The opposite of faith is pride. That's kind of an interesting one, isn't it? Because, and James is making the same assumption here. To be proud and boastful is to deny the truth. Well, why is that? Why can't I speak the truth if my heart is false? Well, he makes it pretty clear, doesn't he, in verse 15 and 16. Such wisdom, this boastful, proud wisdom, does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, of the devil. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. Okay, the two kinds of wisdom are pretty much in the open now. One is from heaven and produces good deeds from a humble heart. The other is from the devil and produces disorder and every evil practice from a boastful, envious, selfish heart that denies the truth. Can there be a more violent contrast than these two ways of living, these two wisdoms? The wisdom of God versus the wisdom of the world, the flesh and the devil. Well, let's think for a minute about this wisdom of the world that James has so graphically described for us, because it is this wisdom that calls to our pride, that draws out the heart of our sinful nature, that appeals to our old humanity. Just think of its characteristics of the wisdom of the world and the devil. Envy, selfish ambition, and boasting. Does it ring any bells? Have we met this wisdom at work today, maybe? Have we felt the pressure of this wisdom this week? Well, if not, we've been asleep all week. Because it's around us all the time. The wisdom of the world, of our workplace, of our society, everything, revolves around envy, selfish ambition, and boasting. We're constantly encouraged, aren't we, by the wise of the world to promote ourselves, to push ourselves forward, to look out for ourselves. I always laugh when somebody on a chat show describes how hard done to they are and then ends by saying, I decided it was time to put myself first for a change, to look out for number one. They always say that. So I decided, time for number one, time to look after myself for a change. But as if that was a new policy, as if up to this point their life had been full of good deeds done in the humility that comes from God's wisdom, don't they? But it's patently obvious to everybody in the studio, and certainly to all the watchers of the programme, that this person has never for once in their life done anything other than put themselves number one. No, worldly wisdom is of the devil and always starts from the pride of self-promotion. That's the mark of it, and that's the mark of our society, which is built on this wisdom of the world and the devil. Well, I mean, why is it of the devil? Don't you think that's a bit strong? You think, goodness me, of the devil? But 1 Timothy 3:6 is a helpful verse. Don't need to look it up. It says this. Paul is warning about leadership in the church, and he warns us not to put a recent convert into a position of leadership, lest they become full of pride. And he says, full of pride and fall under the same judgment as the devil. So the real sin of the devil ultimately is pride. That's his sin. That's what he was judged and condemned for. Pride. And that comes out clearly, doesn't it, in the passages of the Bible that get closest to the heart of what the devil motivates the devil. Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, they're kind of when the Lord sort of puts the devil in the dock and says, this is what you're really like. I know what you're like, and this is what it is. We won't read them now, but they're worth reading, Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, because they're a case study in pride. Because there we learn that the devil was created blameless and beautiful, perfect in every way, but, it says in Ezekiel 28, his heart became proud and he corrupted his wisdom. Isn't that interesting? He corrupts his wisdom by becoming proud. Pride is the thing that undermines real wisdom. But his heart became proud. And then Isaiah chapter 14 tells us what his real thoughts was. I will make myself like the Most High. That was his real pride. Gargantuan pride. I will be as God. But is it gargantuan? It's quite normal, isn't it? Everybody thinks that a little bit. Because remember what he said to Eve. He says, don't you want to be like the Most High too? He says, don't you want to be like God? And he said, yeah, I do actually. Here, I'll eat that. And so did Adam. They thought that too. And that's the mark, isn't it, of unbelief, of the non-Christian, of the natural society. And the devil wants to do that. He wants to drag humanity down into his own proud folly. He said, I want to be like the Most High. And he takes the human race into the same kind of ludicrous pride, because as a race we followed him. Now the wisdom of the world encourages us to make up our own rules, doesn't it? Make up your own rules, to set our own values, to create our own lifestyle, to make our own decisions as we feel right. Do what feels right for you. Isn't that the mantra? The mantra of the world's wisdom, do what feels right for you. Or if you say, this is the gospel, great, if that feels right for you. That's all that matters, whatever feels right for you. Or again, put yourself first. You can only love others when you love yourself first. Heard that one? Isn't that the therapeutic slogan of the world's wisdom? Gotta love yourself. Gotta love yourself. You're no good to anybody unless you really love yourself. So put some energy into that first and worry about loving other people later. That's the therapeutic slogan of the world's wisdom. And in many ways, the whole logic of our modern society, because it's rejected Christ, rests on the envy, selfish ambition, and boasting that James describes as the wisdom of the devil. Because just think about how out of place and strange the Sermon on the Mount sounds in the context of the world system that we're caught up in. Just think about the things that Jesus says about the wisdom that he represents. Don't lust. Always be completely honest. Never seek revenge. Give to whoever asks of you. Love your enemies. Or we could maybe put it as love your rivals. Think of that. Secretly help the needy. When the wisdom of the world is, if we're going to help the needy, we'll make as big of a song and dance of it as possible. Let the maximum number of people know that we're doing it. Definitely not secretly. And don't worry, Jesus says, don't worry about food, drink and clothes. Don't worry about outward appearance. What would happen to our society if we didn't worry about outward appearance? It'd collapse overnight. Imagine an office or a business or a city that followed the teaching, that lived out the Sermon on the Mount, that represented the wisdom that came from God. Well, it couldn't exist. It'd be unthinkable. It seems so ridiculous, impossible, unrealistic in the context of the wisdom of the world, doesn't it? The wisdom of the world. If you just describe that kind of living, it's ridiculous. It's humorous to even think of living like that in the context of the wisdom of the world. Because it doesn't cater to our pride. Therefore, it's not worth bothering with. Every piece of the teaching of Jesus lays the axe at the root of pride. It demands a humility quite beyond anything that human wisdom can ever conceive of. But the problem is, isn't it, the wisdom of the world is under our skin. It's in the air we breathe. It's around us all day, every day. It creeps into our hearts and minds. Because it appeals to our sinful nature, our pride, we'll still have that sinful nature, even though we've put on Christ. And that pride, ultimately, it's a refusal to love, trust, and obey Christ. It's the true mark of the devil, of the wisdom that comes from him. Okay, but what's the alternative? James doesn't leave us, doesn't he? He has verse 17 for us. He's mapped out clearly that wisdom, and it's frightening. But then he tells us the wisdom that comes from heaven. Verse 17. And this is the wisdom that we must seek if we're going to avoid the demonic wisdom of the world. Here it is. The wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Well, in other words, it's everything that the wisdom of the world is not. But it's first of all pure. Pride is never pure. It can never be pure pride because it's always selfish. The proud heart can never have pure intents and motives because it's always thinking of its own glory. It's always thinking of the edge. What's in it for me, ultimately? What's in it for me? That's pride will always think that. And when we think we are most pure, then pride can find most opportunity. I find that when I think I'm most pure, that's when pride comes in most. When I feel most devout or penitent, you know, I feel sorry for my sins, shed a few tears, I think, wow, you are the most spiritual person in central London. You are so advanced spiritually. You see that? The moment when purity and pride cannot coexist for a second. But that's what the wisdom that comes from heaven is. It's pure. It isn't like that. It doesn't think of itself that way. But after pure, heavenly wisdom is peace-loving. Isn't that interesting? Peace-loving in the real sense, because it's easy to love world peace, isn't it? When you get people interviewed and say, what do you want? I want world peace. Yeah, but do you want peace with the irritating person who's in your office? Do you want peace with your neighbour? Do you want, you know, so actually people you have to meet every day? It's easy to want peace with people you never have to meet, people who live far away. But to actually love peace on every situation day to day, that's quite a different thing. That involves self-sacrifice. But this heavenly wisdom is peace-loving, it's considerate and submissive. And submissive in that sense means it yields to others. Be prepared to yield to others. Give ground. All that kind of thing. Our pride loves conflict and competition because we want to be a winner. You can only be a winner if you've got some conflict and competition. But if you yield and are considerate and submissive, can't be a winner. If we submit to others, considering them better than us, we'll never be a winner in terms of worldly wisdom. We'll always be a loser. We'll always look like a loser, won't we, in that way. And that's why we must burn our boats in the Christian life. We cannot be both worldly wise and heavenly wise. To be wise in the devil's wisdom is to be foolish in God's, and vice versa. If you're wise with God, the world will think you're foolish. The devil's wisdom brings envy and selfish ambition, and is unforgiving and economical with the truth, at the very least, bringing disorder and evil practice. God's wisdom brings mercy and good fruit, and is impartial and sincere. It's worth just meditating on this list of qualities of the wisdom that comes from heaven, and just thinking what it might be like to live those out in our day-to-day situations. But such a crop of spiritual fruit, purity, peace, submission, willing to yield, mercy, sincerity. How are we ever to produce such fruit? Well, of course, we can never do this. And this is why James is interesting, isn't it? It's a wisdom that comes down from heaven. It comes down from heaven. It's a gift. It comes to us and it produces humility because of this. As we've studied 1 Corinthians 1 and 2 on Sunday evenings, we discovered that human wisdom will always give rise to boasting. Human wisdom always equals boasting. Why? Because, and James tells us here really, because it's from below rather than above. It's achieved, human wisdom is achieved rather than received. Heavenly wisdom is received. Human wisdom is built up rather than handed down. The wisdom of God humbles us because it will not be earned, only unconditionally given. Well, the Bible addresses this question of true wisdom several times, and in Psalm 111 and Proverbs 9, Rico alerted us to this at the beginning, we learn the starting point of the wisdom that comes from above. What is it at root? We want this wisdom. What is it at root? It's this, the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's the real antidote to the earthly and spiritual wisdom of the devil. The fear of the Lord. That's what we must engender. That's what we must seek if we really want to avoid this devilish wisdom. As we see ourselves before our mighty God, awesome purity, as the hymn put it, as we become amazed at the wonder of his holy love and we're caught up into the majesty of his eternal fellowship, so we reverence and fear him. The Christian knows full well that their natural heart is full of sin and corruption, and so the Christian leans in full dependence on Christ because we know the fear of the Lord, so we fully depend on him to produce the good deeds that he alone can give. This wisdom that begins and ends with Christ cannot avoid being shown in the way we live. So, pray God that as we go back to our work, as we live alongside the wisdom of the world and the devil, we may be given a new initiation into the wisdom that comes from above, so that the pressure to pride from worldly wisdom may be overcome by a conviction to humility, motivated by a fear of the Lord from heavenly wisdom. May our Holy Father make us foolish to the world, but wise to himself in Christ. And may we all ask our Heavenly Father to grant a new fear of the Lord, both to us and to those we witness to, so that every form of human pride may be cast down to the eternal glory of Christ. Amen.